Yo, what is going on, man? We are back with a brand new season. I know I took a little bit of hiatus, but, you know, you got to recharge the brain and try to get things back on a good foot with everything else that's going on in the world. But we are back with another episode in a brand new season, so I am going to keep this thing moving with the Who Got Next podcast. I am your host, E-Dub. I'm going to start the show off with, I haven't had a chance to talk about this topic. It is a pretty much of a prevalent topic in the world today in regards to probably therapy. And I do have a brother in here right now by way of his sister. Me and her are real good friends, and we are in here talking to Mr. Brandon Richard. What's going on, sir?
Yo, what up? What's up?
Everything's good. So I just want to kind of talk to you. I know you are big in the you are a psychologist, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that. Of course, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, probably a couple of myths and things like that.
Sure.
But I know you have just started your own practice.
That's right, Richard Counseling and Wellness Center.
Okay, and how long has that been going on?
We opened in February. We're in the South Park area. We have a dietitian and an eating disorder specialist on staff, as well as myself. And we're in the process of hiring two other people to come on to the practice.
Okay, and what was you doing before you had started, decided to say to yourself, I want to open up my own practice now?
I was an associate director of Presbyterian Psychological Services. I had been there for about 5.5 years. Was pretty high up, was, you know, on the path to become the executive director within the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
There was just kind of a change in the ethos of the organization. And, it was just kind of a meeting of the minds as far as the direction that the executive director wanted to take it versus the vision that I had. And I just said, you know what, maybe it's better for me for me to do my own thinking and kind of create my own platform from scratch, as opposed to just trying to piggyback on something that is a great organization. I mean, I love that organization and I will forever be indebted to it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think, you know, with growth, you know, you have to take some risks. So it was my turn, and I said, hey, you know, this is my last, you know, years to be young. So
right.
Might as well go ahead and do it now.
That's what's up. So let's kind of go back, sure. back a little bit. Number one, I do have a couple of friends that are in that field. And one thing that they do normally talk about is not having enough representation when it comes to African-Americans in these fields. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, it's an absolutely fair assessment. I mean, I think particularly men of color. There's so few of us for a variety of reasons. I think institutionally, there's a lot of reasons why we're not there. I think mm-hmm. it's not something that people really understand, both from the work itself, financially, what you can potentially make, right? I mean, there's no floor and no ceiling, really.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't kind of really know. You know, when I tell people what I do, sometimes I can see people kind of thinking to themselves, well, I wonder how much money does he make? I have no idea.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and the work is difficult. I mean, you know, there's a lot of graduate school and training programs and licensures that you have to keep up with. So, I mean, it's a tedious process. But I think if you love the work, it's worth it. I mean, I absolutely love what I do for a living. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm one of the few people to get to, you know, go to work per se, and I don't really feel like I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like I'm just, you know, not saying just chopping it up, having a conversation, because it's way more nuanced than that. But you're really trying to take all of these complex, nuanced ideas and kind of distill it into something that's usable for your patients.
Right.
And that the challenge of that is so fulfilling for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as far as the representation piece, I think a lot of people don't really understand it, understand the challenge, understand everything that comes with it. And, you know, I hope to, you know, be a representation for some people to, you know, want to in the next, you know, generations or so to say, hey, maybe this is something
right.
that I can do, that I can, you know, make a good living, I can support my family, and I can do something that will help people in generations going forward.
Where did you study at?
So I started at Morehouse College in 1999, had to move back for some family reasons, finished mm-hmm. up at UNC Charlotte, and then got a dual master's degree at UNC Charlotte in community and clinical psychology.
Okay. So what made, was there any, these are questions I like to ask, was there any time, I guess, when you were growing up, was there anything probably that, not to say specifically to your own personal situation, but was there probably some things that, you know, you had kind of paid attention to growing up, and when it got time for you to decide that I want to go into college and I started thinking about these things, is that probably what transpired, you know, that kind of went about saying, you know what, I think it's something I want to get into?
Sure. So an aunt of mine who's passed away was diagnosed, I think at that time it was called manic depression.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in the late 80s.
Right.
So it was interesting to kind of see those manic episodes and those depressive episodes, you know, as a young kid, not really knowing what that was, but always having an intellectual curiosity into why some people would act that way, while others would not, particularly
right.
when we're all kind of in the same, you know, area and, not, you know, no one is experiencing something different than the other. But, you mm-hmm. know, that's a child's way of thinking. Now, fast forward to high school, I had an internship at a doctor's office. Anybody who knew me growing up knew that I was going to be a physician. Right.
Mm-hmm.
My godfather is a physician, and I always wanted to do that. And I had an internship my junior and senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a great opportunity to really be in there with the patients while the doctor was examining them. And I kind of realized that I didn't want to do the work of a physician.
Mm-hmm.
I was way more interested in the stories that they were telling.
Right.
Than I ever was a procedure, an EKG, or, you know, a broken finger or anything like mm-hmm. that. I wanted the prestige of one, but I didn't want to do the work. That's when I said, maybe there's something different about it. Now, I never knew I knew the word existed, but I never really knew a psychologist, right? I didn't have anybody that I looked up to
mm-hmm.
that was in the field. I mean, I think the best that I ever knew was like a school social worker or something like
right.
that, right? You know, and if you're a decent enough student, you probably
will never saw him.
Right? You never talked
never
to,
talk to
a school counselor. So I know one existed. But I didn't really know what they did. I didn't really know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, quiet as kept, probably what everybody else sees. When you see a psychologist on TV, they're very bland. They're very boring. It's tell me how you feel about this. Or they're, you know, showing the Rorschach and, you know, what do you see? And you know, and it kind of made it this very dry, you know, type of thing. And I'm like, but I don't feel that I'm a dry person.
Right.
So maybe this isn't for me. But continuing on, I had an internship in 2003 in a psychiatric facility
mm-hmm.
for a whole summer.
Okay.
And I saw the diaspora of all types of diagnoses, all types of problems. I got to hear these stories. And when you're literally locked in a facility with them, it's either like, do you want to do this or not?
Right.
And I realized that I didn't want to work in a psychiatric facility, but again, I love the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the stories that really kind of got to me. And you could hear like, okay, with the sincerity that they had in their voice, wow, they're really going through something. And I was like, wow, I wonder if I could be able to help them. And
mm-hmm.
I always was thinking, I always had, for whatever reason, this gift, ability, whatever, just to kind of see the world a little bit differently.
Right.
I can conceptualize things, you know, a little faster, a little differently. And I said, okay, well, that's one thing, but I need to sculpt this into a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I went really full bore into psychology as opposed to going into med school.
Okay, so let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Who therapies the therapist? I don't know if I.
No, that's a great question.
I've always asked that question because I know with you're speaking to individuals confidentially, of course,
mm-hmm.
and you're hearing everything that they have going on.
Sure.
Of course, when they're talking to you, I mean, they're paying you, mm-hmm. the insurance company, however it works. You're getting paid to fulfill an obligation to your patient.
Sure.
And at the time, the patient isn't, they're not thinking about you. They don't know what you have going on. They don't know how you woke up that morning. They don't know what bills you have to pay or personal relationships or anything like that. So
sure.
when you're going through that, I guess it's a two-part question.
Okay.
The first question is, how do you separate the two? The second question is, who helps you get through your day, how you help try to help your patient get through there?
That's a great question. So part one, how do I get through the day? So I have a great group of network of other therapists and friends that are outside of the field,
right?
That I talk to, not necessarily about cases per se. And I do have I have two mentors. I have a business mentor and I have a psychologist mentor. And I think mentorship is essential for anybody who really wants to progress, period, but particularly in my field, because it's not like like in medicine, when you diagnose, it's you just know it and you kind of go about your business.
Right.
In my field, it is just the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you need people to conceptualize things differently. They can hear things that you can't hear. Just like as a therapist, I hear things that the patient doesn't hear.
Right.
So, you know, really kind of going into my network of people, I am huge on self-care, exercising, sleeping well, but really investing in that. I mean, because it's one thing to, you know, to preach it and say, oh, you need to take care of yourself. But as a therapist, you really, really need to do that. And to separate yourself as much as you can when you can, such as I don't check emails after a certain time. I don't, you know, or phone calls or anything like that. I really have to kind of, you know, compartmentalize those aspects.
Right.
So that's one thing that I really do. But yeah, it's really, you know, I don't want to say venting, but it's really just like, hey, I need to get this off my chest. Because you're right. I probably see about 7-8 patients a day, right? So it's any week I'm seeing between 35 to 40, you know, people or having sessions a week. How does it not get to me? So it's going to sound a little counterintuitive, but it actually works. The more people you see, the easier it is to compartmentalize because you don't have the time to dwell on it. So I'm very ritualistic in what I do. I think anybody who, particularly at my old company, I'm trying to gain my routine there. It was like I did the absolute same thing every single time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would walk downstairs, I would go to the bathroom, get my water, go to the bathroom, and it was almost to the point where my patients knew that I was coming down because they can hear the water, they can hear me open the door. So in that kind of like, it allows me to almost like, for lack of a better term, dispense the last session out of me, and then I'm now available to take on what is ever going
right.
on. When I first started, it was, you know, I might see two people, I might have a 2-hour break or a 3-hour break because I'm trying to build my caseload, and you would just dwell,
right.
like, oh, I should have said this, and I should have done this, or I didn't say this. And the more people I saw, I just didn't have that opportunity. So, you know, and I've been doing this, you know, I graduated in grad school, finished in 07, so... You know, I've been doing this enough where you just kind of learn those tricks of the trade going on. But it is, you know, and with that being said, there's just going to be some cases where you're just like, or people that you work with, and you're just like, I can't shake this. So then you don't try to.
Right.
And that's when you really reach out to your mentors, or you just, you know, sometimes to talk about the case without, you know, giving any confidential information. And sometimes I might talk to a friend who's in finance and thinks about this very differently. And you know, and they're very kind of matter of fact about it. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Right.
So I'm always looking to hear different ideas because I know what my expertise is in, but I'm not an expert in human behavior.
That's good. So with that, I got a lot of questions.
Sure, please.
I got a lot of questions because I do think about things like this. So... As far as mental health goes, it, as I kind of stated before, you know, in 2019, I want to say it's probably at the forefront of how people deal with everything going on in the world today. So I guess my question to you is, since you've been doing research on it, where do you think this started? I sometimes think it's historical. Where the history starts, I don't know. But as of now, I think with social media, trying to look at other people's lives, looking at where you're not and where other people are, I think all of that plays a part. And I think that's just a small percentage. I'm not an expert. You are. So with that, where do you personally feel in your findings and your studies where mental health has become a real big thing that people actually need to start paying attention to?
Well, I think when you have mediums such as social media or just television, and you get to see in real time what people are kind of really going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since the advent of television and radio, it was really about this choreographed, you know, we have a script, you're going to, you know, so even if somebody was talking about mental health, it was scripted, right? It was this very narrative-driven idea. This person is going to be sad. I think for people of my generation, the Saved by the Bell episode with Jesse is taking pills and she's all over the place.
Man, I just talked about an episode the other day, but yeah.
Right, so like, but it was a very, you know, narrative-driven idea. And I think the advent with social media, and social media creates a level of the better is more seductive than the good, right? So as good as my life may be right now, I can always, with the click of a, you know, with the use of my thumb, to see a life that's better than mine. And it doesn't seem, it seems so attainable and so far away at the same time. You know, I was having a conversation with one of my colleagues, and I was listening to music, and you know my sister and how she's a music head.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a music head too. So I was listening to music of different generations, and I was saying, you know, each generation has an emotion that is associated, you know, with that. I'm 38 years old, so in the 90s, grunge music was a thing, right? And it was very sad and depressed. And,
right.
You know, and then you had, you know, the early to late 80s was like, or late 70s to late 80s was like anger, right? It was like we were angry, and, you know, the rap music.
Right, right.
Even from what's going on, Marvin Gaye on. And then now I think it's with the social media, it's anxiety.
I agree.
That is absolutely the emotion du jour. And so I think because, you know, anxiety, the way I define the triad of emotions that I see in therapy is you have anger, you have sadness, and you have depression. Okay?
Okay.
Anger is the emotion of change. I don't like what's going on. I don't like the state of affairs. I want something to be different. And my anger is a way of expressing this change that I am seeking. Anxiety is the emotion of the unknown. I don't know what the hell is going on, right? We know what we tend to know what we're afraid of, right? Anxiety is that I don't know,
right?
Something's not right. And depression is the resignation that the thing you were angry about cannot change, right? So I was angry about this. I feel hopeless. I feel helpless. And then I become depressed because I'm just like, I really know what I can do. So it's a way of coping. So I think when people have expressed this anxiety and this emotion and you see it in real time, plus the proliferation of insurance and everything that kind of comes with that, it was just this great kind of confluence of things that were happening where you had an opening up of different careers. You know, well, for the longest time, it was just psychologists. That was it. Now you have licensed counseling social workers. You have, you know, LPCs. You have licensed marriage and family therapists. Like, so you have these, you know, so many more people who can do this. And you have people who have more of a desire. They have more disposable income. They have insurance. So those things were going to occur. And I think as such, I mean, I think this is probably the best time in history if you are a therapist to be one. Now,
that's a good thing and a you think it's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. I get when I say bad thing, I want to make sure I'm speaking correctly on this. When I'm thinking bad, I'm thinking about the fact that there are a lot of people going through this, and a lot of people do not get help.
That's true.
I don't think I've had bouts with. I believe we all have thoughts about. About therapy, period. I don't care what you say. I think everybody should get it when they can and when they feel it's right. Now, sometimes that's subjective, depending on. I think with me personally, I could speak on myself for that. I think my concern is always going to be about anxiety. One of the things that you said as far as like just not knowing about the no, sometimes you just don't know. Or you could be overanalyzing things. I think I tend to overanalyze a lot.
Okay.
When it comes to me and some of the things that I have going on personally, based off of I don't know what's going to happen next in this situation, which can really screw with my which can really screw with my brain a lot of times. I think, but there are other facets of it that can really just drive somebody crazy.
Sure. Can I speak on that for a second?
You can.
So we all are looking for confidence, right? So like probably about 15 years ago, self-esteem became a big thing in a lexicon, right? High self-esteem, low self-esteem. I don't have confidence in myself. And a lot of times what I try to teach my patients is your logic will only be as good as the premise from which you operate on. Okay. So if you're operating on faulty logic, a faulty premise, your logic, no matter how flawless it is, it still won't work. So as an example, most things that we do in life will not be certain of something until either time allows certainty to occur or it's something that's more math-based. I do this, I get this result, I get this product, right? But a lot of life is not like that.
No.
But if we feel that we should be certain, about something, then yeah, I'm going to be anxious because I'm never going to really fully get this product, this answer. So I'm always like, well, did I do the right thing or something like that? So, or even or another example, and this is, and I'm going to get into some historical stuff. So, you know, excuse me for a second. Mm-hmm. So there's this thing called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it says the basic needs, eating, sleeping, drinking, you know, sleep, you know, breathing, all that is very basic, right? And right above that is safety. You have safety and security. Right above that is like love and belonging and friendships and family. Above that is esteem and confidence and achievement and promotions and things like that. And then the last thing is called self-actualization. But I would say we use that term all the time. We just call it living my best life or my best self. Okay. Right. So the first two, the bottom needs are more concrete, which means it's either right or wrong. Either I eat or I don't. If I don't eat, I die. Mm-hmm. If I don't drink, I die. If I don't breathe, I die. Okay.
Right.
Same thing about safety. Either I have a roof over my head or I don't. I can't kind of have it.
Right.
But above that, they're more abstract things, which is it's not anything that's purely right or wrong. It's good or bad. So, for example, I'm sure you've heard this. You know, I married the right man. I married the right woman. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you made a good choice.
Right.
Right. And you could have married somebody else and it'll be another good choice. Right. Right? The relationship turned out well for you. And that's great. But it's not concrete. It's not either I made the right one or the wrong one. Mm-hmm. I just made a good choice.
Right.
So if I think about things that are abstract concretely, I'm always looking things like math. There's one answer. I got that wrong. Let me go find this. Nope, that was wrong. I'll go find this. Right. And life isn't really like that.
No.
Life is more like history, that an event happens. There's several things that contribute to that thing happening. And some are more important than others, and some are more relevant than others. But there could be seven factors that played into this. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for this one answer for everything. And when that doesn't work, now I feel anxious because I don't even know what to do. Shit, that didn't work. So, sorry about
that. Oh, no, you're good, man.
Okay. So, you know, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So what do I do? And so that's just going to create anxiety. And what it's also going to do is decrease your confidence. You know, I said, I'm not confident that I'm certain that I can help a patient. I'm confident in the probability that I can, right? More than likely I can.
That's
more
a good,
than likely
a good way
I have
to look
the requisite
it.
Skills
right.
And training and patience.
That you prepared yourself for that moment to be in that situation to figure it out.
And you might bring me something that I can't handle. At the same time, anytime somebody walks into my office, I have absolutely no idea what they're going to say to me. Not a clue. Mm-hmm. Not a clue. So why would I prepare as if I did? There would be no point. Because now, you know, I'm like, oh, remember this thing? We had this homework exercise. And they come in, they're like, yeah, my mom just died. Uh-oh.
Flipping the whole script. That's not what you expected. So
I live in kind of a state of a little bit of anxiety anyway. But it should be. There's certain things in life that I absolutely should be anxious about. I apply for this job. I got the interview. You're going to hear in 5 days. Hell yeah, I'm going to be anxious for those next five days. That's the absolute proper emotion to feel. Yeah. I don't know. And when I do, it's like, oh, I'm anxious. I don't know what I should do for the next 5 days. Go chill. Go relax. Because you can't know.
There's nothing. It's not in your hands anymore. You got to wait.
Your anxiety is not going to accelerate time. That make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
So that's... You know, not to go too much on a tangent, but mm-hmm. but I mean, that's what I see quite a bit. So it's like, yes. So people come into my office a lot of times and they'll say this. I'm sad. I want to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to fix my sadness. I want to fix my anxiety. I want to fix my depression. I said, well, look, first off, I'm not a mechanic. And if I am, then I got to keep you broke to get paid.
Right.
I'm not going to do that. Number two, if you fix something, it's fixed in all conditions. Right. If I fix the engine on the car, it works. It's fixed. Mm-hmm. I'm helping you cope. Because if I fix your sadness and something happens where you should be sad and you're not sad, then that's diagnostic. Because it's not appropriate for the situation. You know, if your mom dies, you're like, yeah, my sadness is fixed. I'm good. Mm-hmm. No. It's like, no, what you're saying is I don't want to feel sad all the time. And I'll say, okay, well, what are the things that are occurring? Some of the smaller stuff to prevent you from having the energy to cope with life.
Right.
Because we all got things to deal with, right? We all got bills to pay. We got to make love to our partners. We got to, you know, do all of these things, you know, deal with our families. And, oh, my mom don't like my girl and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. That's just life. right? No one is necessarily exponentially better equipped to handle that than the next person. Mm-hmm. That's not it. But it's if I have that and I don't have enough money to pay my bills, and you know I'm in this relationship that I can't get out of because I'm afraid or something like that. Now that's going to take so much of that energy out of you. So when these big things occur, you have no energy
right.
to do it. And life is going to punch you, right? It's going to punch you in the gut, right? What Mike Tyson say? Everybody has a game plan until they get punched.
Exactly.
Right? And if you go right back to your stance as you did before, you'll get knocked out. So it's like, hey, I got hit. Let me take a step back. You know, and taking a step back could be going to therapy. Let me figure out a new stance mm-hmm. to protect myself while at the same time being assertive enough to be on the offensive so I can grow in life.
Mm. That since you put, yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough the way you look at things, but I'm over here thinking like, yeah, I thought about it, but the way you broke it down was kind of, I think you put it in a broader, with a broad stroke than anything else. With the therapy aspect, there's so many myths.
Okay.
Myths out there. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you hear about therapy?
First and foremost, you're crazy if you go, mm-hmm. right? And I'll say crazy people don't come into my office because crazy people don't know they are. Right. So if you're taking this assertive step to get some assistance and some help, the chances of you being crazy is slim. Right. And crazy is not a diagnostic term by any stretch of the imagination. So that's one thing, that you have to be crazy to go. It's crazy expensive. And with insurance, it's not. Now, insurance is a different animal as far as, you know, what do you take and, you know, how much is someone willing to pay? It is an investment.
Yeah.
Therapy is an investment. It is not, you know, I mean, I'll hear people say, well, how many sessions is this going to take? I say, I don't know. How am I supposed to know? I don't know what you're bringing me. So if I can say, oh, give me 8 and I'll be fine, I'm saying you're not important. Just give me your 8 sessions. You might as well pay me up front and go on about your business.
Right.
It's not that. So people think it's fast. They have a medical model about it. I go in, the doctor tells me what's wrong with me. He gives me a mental prescription. I go on about my business and I do it. And life isn't like that.
Right.
I mean, I have a patient that I've seen for over 6 years. And I've seen some for 6 months. And I've seen some for 2 months. And I've seen one a couple of times. I was like, yeah, you don't need this. Right. So it just really depends. So another thing is that black people don't go to therapy. I am here to say, particularly based on my caseload, that ain't true. It's not true. It is. The people who really get it, really get it. Mm-hmm. The people who have these preconceived notions about what therapy is, I'll say this. It's much easier to confirm something than it is to deny it.
Right.
Okay? We skew to want to confirm our own beliefs because it's our own ego and evolution kind of allows us to do so. So if I think that I have to be crazy to go to therapy, I'll kind of skew the conversations to either sound like I'm not crazy, and you're trying to use my license to prove that you're not crazy. This mm-hmm. happens a lot of time in couple sessions. Right.
Because so, one want to be there and the other one really doesn't.
Almost always that is the case.
Okay.
And almost always it's a man.
Exactly.
Right. And, both people are saying, well, you know, if you don't get your shit together, we'd be fine. But both people are saying that about different things. And what they say is they're so far gone that mm-hmm. they come into the session and then they say, well, see, if a psychologist couldn't fix this. Guess right. we're over, right? So it's you don't go when it's bad. You go when it's starting to. Or you go when it's healthy. Because, you know, you can look healthy and be sick inside.
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes people are like, well, we're doing well. And I'm like, well, what's doing well? We don't argue. I'm like, oh, y'all sick. Because there is nobody.
You're holding it in.
Yeah. There is nobody. How can you care about somebody that much and not disagree with them at times? The stakes are too high.
Right.
So that's some of the preconceived notions, again, is really about people are crazy. Black people don't go to therapy. That's a white person's thing. It's really expensive. And it varies. Right. Mm-hmm. Some people have great insurance and their copay is $10 and they come in and they're like, yeah, I can invest $40 a month in this.
Let me start right there. Sure. To interject, because I want you to talk about that part. So explain to people that your insurance covers this.
Mm hmm.
Because a lot of people don't, I'm not going to lie, I was one of them, okay. A long time ago somebody had to tell me, you know your insurance covers this, right?
And yep.
I said, for real? I didn't know that. So I think that's one side of it that a lot of people don't understand, that they have to go searching for it within their insurance to see,
yes.
if this is covered?
Yes, absolutely. So I'll speak for who I take and what insurances that I take, and even for the insurances that I don't take, how you can still be reimbursed to some degree.
Right.
So I take Blue Cross Blue Shield, I take Aetna and CBHA insurances. I am what they call out-of-network for UnitedHealthcare, MedCost, and Cigna.
Okay.
So in-network means I'm on the panel. Depending on your insurance policy, you can either it's no cost, a deductible, and, you know, a co-insurance is a percentage of what the insurance reimburses. So there's some checks and balances to a person taking insurance. I personally take insurance for one reason and one reason only. I want to help my people.
Right.
Period. If I didn't give a damn, I would not take insurance. And I would make twice as much money as I do now.
So there are therapists out there that do not care to take insurance.
Oh, yes. And you almost want one. And here's why. Anybody worth their weight in gold says, as a psychologist, if I get paid, let's say, $100 per session, right? And I'm great. And somebody is mediocre and they make $100 an hour. I have no incentive to be better. I can only take so many people. And as long as my caseload is full, I have no incentive to be better. Insurance doesn't incentivize greatness. It incentivizes availability. So even with a lot of psychiatrists don't take insurance either for that same reason. They're like, no, I'm exponentially better than this person, and yet they get paid the same as me. And if they're willing to work more than me, they'll make way more than me.
Wow.
So like I said, I take insurance because I know I'm doing this for more than just money. I am not doing this. If I was doing this for the money, I wouldn't be doing this. I would be a physician.
Right.
Right. So it's not that. But so as an out-of-network provider, going back to that, you pay my rate,
mm-hmm.
I give you a receipt, and you can send it to the insurance company, and they will reimburse you a portion of it. So you might say, oh, you charge how much an hour? I'm like, yes, but you might get 50% of that back or 75% of that back, depending on your plan. So there are many more options that are there than people are aware of. And, you know, most people, if people take out of pocket, the great thing about that is that they can negotiate their own price. So they can understand a particular situation. I mean, there have been people that I've heard, and I'm like, yeah, you would not be able to afford it, but you need this that bad that I will cut down the price so that you can come, because it is important.
All right. And so with everything, you know, one of the questions that I like to ask on this show is, based off of who got next, is what's next up for you and what you have going on in the city. So just let people know what your goal is, what you're trying to do, and what you're trying to bring out to the city.
Okay. Well, what I want Richler Counseling and Wellness Center to be is to be the premier wellness center in the city.
Mm-hmm.
I want outstanding therapists. I want to leave a legacy of people being better, not just for the individual, but for the families, for the large community as a whole, but also look at other aspects of health, right? I put wellness for a reason. I have a dietitian staff. I want to get, you know, nutritionists and physical therapists and other things involved as well, because, yeah, I can treat, you know, the more abstract things, and I'm really good at that. But what I'm not very good at is understanding diet and nutrition, and because those are very basic things too. I mean, no matter how depressed you are, if you haven't used the bathroom in a week, you're not going to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what I say to you, right? So I want to tackle all of those things from the very basic to the very abstract, and be able to create an environment where people want, the premier therapists want to come and work for us, that we create an environment, an incentive and a payment structure that people, they vibe with, they're into the ethos of what we're trying to do, and they want to be a part of that. I want to leave a legacy of therapists that when they go off on their own and do their own thing, because not everybody's going to want to be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I left somewhere, right? I was next in line, and I know I want to make therapists so good, they're like, yeah, I might want to do this on my own.
Right.
So I have no ego about that. I want people to go out and be great, you know, whether it's with me or someone else, but I really wanted just to create a larger environment in the Charlotte area where people of all races and stripes and creeds and colors and all of those things are getting the assistance that they need so they can live the lives that they want to live.
There you have it. Brandon, I do appreciate your time. Thank you for coming in and speaking with me. I got to salute your sister. on your sister on that. I thought this would be a great platform to have that conversation because, again, everybody's talking about mental health, but they're talking about it, but they're not talking about it. So mm-hmm. I think, if anything, I do appreciate what you're doing with the type of work that you do, because we do need that out here. And hopefully a lot of us, and I'm speaking to us as African-Americans, are taking that responsibility to practice self-care as you have so eloquently spoke on this platform. So just let everybody know exactly where your company is, what information you want to provide to people, anything that you want to let my listeners know about where to find you and where to locate you. It's your time.
Sure. So again, the organization is called Risher Counseling and Wellness Center. The location is 5970 Fairview Road, Suite 420. If you want to find me on platforms, you can find me on Twitter as PLLC Risher, PLLCRISHER. You can find me on Instagram, Brandon.Risher. And you can find me on my website, BrandonRisher.org. I also do a monthly TV segment on WBTV on mental health.
Okay.
Next one is, by the time the podcast airs, it would already, you know, been done, but you can find me, and, or you could just, you know, Google my name and, you know, see any speeches or anything that I do as well.
Bet. Again, this is E-Dub, and this is the brand new episode of Who Got Next. If you want to reach out to me, you can. My email is whogotnextclt@gmail.com, and you can follow me on my Instagram, which is whogotnext_CLT. As I always say, if you're out there, you got something going on in the city, trust me, I will find you. I will find you. I'm always doing my research. And if I haven't reached out to you yet, trust me, I will soon, because I am seeing what you have going on. So again, I want to just thank Brandon for sitting down with me, having this conversation, and we'll be back. All right. Peace.
All right.